What is up, everybody? Welcome to It's Not Only Football, Friday Night Lights and Beyond. Today, we're crossing the line. Season 1, Episode 8. Zach?
Post-homecoming, Street throws himself into murder ball. Smash does what he's got to do to get juiced. Inspired by Sober Hulk, Billy gets so far up Tim's butt, they get in a fight. Julie debates whether or not to date Matt, while Coach and Tammy debate how to keep her locked up for the rest of her life.
Oh, that was good. You're getting good at this, man. You're like.
If I put effort into things,
you're the all star. It's insane.
I just gotta try.
Sober Hulk.
You're like Sober Riggins Hulk right now. Welcome, everybody, to another episode of It's Not Only Football, Friday Night Lights and Beyond. And if this episode is not only football, what is it for you? I'm going to start. It is going back to comfort or branching out to new beginnings.
That was cute. Well, I'm going to pull a Guilford here for what this episode was about to me and give a vague answer, because to me, I think, you know, I know I should say like, oh, you know, this episode's about like camaraderie and it's about found family and building your, but I was just so horrified at that poor girl saying that they wanted to force her into a three-way that I can't get it out of my mind. So that's what this episode was about for me, was that I'm dealing with the trauma of that scene. But maybe, so I don't know, Zach, can you for once participate in this system that we have going and pull something out of your behind?
Well, since you got Sober Guilford today, I actually did some homework, and it's kind of funny hearing yours, because I actually was struck by, and this is kind of a constant what it's about, but it really felt prominent in this episode, and that is the weight on these people's shoulders. And towards the end of the episode, a lot of it is just over the shoulder, like literally following Smash's shoulder through the gym, and I remember there's a scene where it's on your shoulder a lot, and I just think it, and Tim, I like that ending beautiful shot of Tim and Billy at the counter, and we'll get to it, but it's just over their shoulders, and you see the two of them just so defeated. At least they have each other, but I really felt like, you know, the weight on
those shoulders,
on
your answer
on the
is
Taylor,
shoulders?
The Taylor parents' shoulders trying to raise a young
shoulders.
Woman in Texas.
Zach, it's not only about football, is what is it? What is
it's
it
about shoulders? It's about shoulder weights.
It's shoulder
Listen,
pads.
I'll take it. That's shoulders. The most like intelligent answer you've given in this section.
You know, I think my Friday Night Lights book club is paying off. I'm starting to understand how to analyze things, and I'm not drinking anymore. I'm just putting a liquid IV in my bourbon bottle.
I love that stuff, man. Why not hydrate? Why not multiply your hydration?
Yeah, don't just hydrate, like super hydrate.
Yeah, that's my whole thing too.
So I love that the title to me is kind of reminiscent of my It's Not Only Football, crossing the line. Do you or do you not, right? Everybody in this episode is kind of pondering. They have to make a decision, right? Jason Street is trying to figure out, do I play in this wheelchair rugby scrimmage, even though everybody says I'm not ready? Julie Taylor is asking, do I go on a date with Matt Saracen, even though I am sworn to hate all football players all the time?
Which will prove to be a life-changing decision.
Smash is faced with, you know, how far do I have to go to get myself to college? And it's like crossing that line over, how am I going to afford these steroids that I'm doing? It's like everybody here is crossing a line. And the show's not usually that literal with the titles. Some shows are very literal with the titles all the time. But I love that Zach's theme for this show is kind of one of the shots, and it's always over somebody's shoulder. You're expecting them to either take a step forward or stay right where they are. And Jeffrey Reiner was the director of this episode, and that was, I guess, a conscious choice he made, and it was brilliant. He was our directing producer throughout the entire course of the show, and it was written by Bridget Carpenter, who went on to be a showrunner, Friday Night Lights and Beyond. She created 11/22/63, if you remember that show that was on Hulu with James Franco. She wrote on Parenthood with you, and she's now a part of Westworld. So,
I got to say, this was always one of my favorite episodes. I remember it's one of those ones I always remember, and I remember watching it and thinking, God damn, Reiner's good. Like, he's such a good director, and he gets this show, like, hopefully more than anyone because he's the director-producer, but this episode's always stuck with me and been one of my favorites.
Yeah. Mm. And it's such an interesting place to start. This particular episode is just with the Riggins boys grocery shopping.
Yeah. And I know. I love it.
Oh, I love that scene. It's just the two of them actually being brothers. Mm-hmm. You know, you're hearing Billy on the phone talk to his boss. He's got a lot of troubles. And he's at the same time trying to parent, again, unfairly being forced into having to parent his little brother. Mm-hmm. And it's this wonderful, you know, scene of him going, you have made a step to make yourself better, and I'm going to double down with you. So you're not going to eat crap anymore. You're going to eat healthy foods. I'm going to pick up this bag of peas. It's going to pay off later. And and then immediately Riggins is met with the old comfort, you know, having ended things with, you know, with Lila, basically, the old comfort of Tyra.
Well, and how cool is it when Tyra walks up and she's like, oh, sweetie, do you need me to buy you the little magazine? Like, I'm like, God, she's just cool.
She's like, boy, just stop fighting. I'll buy the magazine.
She's like, enough already with the magazine. That's so chic. I love her.
Yeah. So cool. And then that transitions right into...
Oh, this is one of my favorites, though. It's like another literal, like, you want me to give you a ride or something? And then they're like, riding each other in the back room.
In the grocery store.
It's like the laundry drop when the clothes fell to the floor.
You see where they're hooking up is the lunch meat cooler. I'm like, God, what the
heck? You guys, I on Good Girls had to do a sex scene in a grocery store cooler. And they were like, I remember the wardrobe department was like, we're going to just put some cabbage and like lettuce here in your. And I was like, what is this job?
Wait, I'm sorry, the wardrobe department did? That doesn't seem like their job.
That's like a props thing, but if it's on your clothes, it's definitely not wardrobe.
Maybe it's actually they're very territorial.
Listen, we all work together, and we put the cabbage where it needed to go, if you know what I mean. Yeah. And here we are.
I don't know how you actually do one of those hot and heavy scenes in a lunch meat cooler, because look, my first job was working at Publix supermarkets in Florida, home of the best key lime pie in the world, but also the stinkiest meat lockers. You don't get rid of that smell. You go in there like how oof, they are really good actors, the two of them.
Oh, but speaking
banging
of,
down I mean, in a lunch meat locker.
You asked me before you wanted to know where the Alamo Freeze was, and it is a national chain, and I will never eat at one of those places again because it was so gross in there.
I thought it was shot at Dan's in France, which is a local Austin establishment.
No.
Dan's actually – okay, whatever. People want to know the behind the scenes or the fun stuff about Austin, Texas, or shooting the show. There is a burger chain in Austin, Texas called Dan's, and I love this story. I read it in the news when we were working there. Dan's – I would go to Dan's, really good burgers, really good onion rings, and then I started seeing France. Dude, I'm hungry. We haven't eaten.
I know. I have to say, I'm going to put you on pause real quick.
What?
I was on my way over here. All right, so, you know, pulling back curtains, it's 3:13 p.m. I was on my way over here at like 11:30 and thought, oh, I'm kind of hungry. I haven't eaten yet today. I'm like, oh, yeah, May always brings something to eat. And then I got here, it's like, oh, no, here. May's on Zoom. What am I going to eat?
Yeah,
and then,
see what happens when you don't show up? The boys go hungry.
Yeah, so now
I have like tons of food just for myself. I'm like, who's going to eat all this vegetables?
I know. I've literally seen you eating stuff on the Zoom. And so I'm like,
so I'm hungry. So I'm talking about key lime pie, lunch meat. Now I'm talking about Dan's.
That's my favorite pie, by the way. But go ahead.
So Dan's established back in the 60s or 70s, somewhere in there. This man, Dan Junk, his last name's Junk, I think. Dan falls in love with a woman named Frances, otherwise known as Fran. So Dan falls in love with Fran. They have 7 kids. They open a number of burger shops in Austin, Texas. And then somewhere in the 90s, they get divorced. And then all of a sudden, half of those Dan's become Fran's. So she just walks out and puts an FR in the front of it. Instead of Dan's, it's now Fran's. Yes. She serves the same menu. It's the exact same burgers, exact same fries, exact same shakes, everything made the same. But the kids were like, yeah, everybody thinks it was like this big, like, oh, our parents hate each other. No, it was pretty like calm and cool. She just decided, if I'm going to own these restaurants, they're going to be named after me. So Dan's
That's
and
like
Fran's.
Iconic. That's kind of like it's the wino forever. It's the tattoo of changing it from Winona forever on Johnny Depp to the, we got the last two, the NA removed, and now he just has wino forever. You make do with what you have. You know what I'm saying?
I love it. I love the, that whole story always tickled me. So if you're ever in Austin, Texas, Dan's or Fran's, there's not a difference. Go to either one. Very good.
And they're okay with you going to either one because they're fine.
100%. So we go from Riggins and Tyra getting down and, you know, the same old way that they did in the pilot, to a really sweet scene between Street and Lila in the hospital. Which, why does this show have the loudest kissing? Like, when I'm watching this, every kiss is like...
Ew!
And I'm I think that's just you and Minka.
What? You don't think it's everybody? You
that's
just think
fired.
It's me
Wait,
and...
did you not kiss Amy loudly or what? You didn't slurp her?
Here, you guys want to hear a funny story?
No, no, no. I want you to answer the question.
I don't know. I haven't noticed. You guys are the only people I've seen sucking face. I didn't notice it with Tyra and
Did we suck face? Wait, now I'm like, did we make a loud sucking sound
maybe?
When we kiss out?
You know what it is? It's because Minka and I maybe talk softer than everybody else on the show.
So your kissing sounds louder?
Well, because we're talking softer. They're turning the mics up, and then the kissing is just like earthquakes.
That's
very logical.
That's actually kind of a good concept. Right. What's the story? Tell me, Zach.
I'll tell it real quick. So when I was a kid, through maybe college, I used to think that the noise when you kiss someone that was like fake and put on. So whenever I would kiss someone, I would just...
Like part of it?
I would just put my lips on her lip and not make the sound.
Did you never have like a real life teen romantic comedy moment where somebody tried to teach you how to kiss after this? Where you were just
I think
like,
after a while I just
you
gave
were just
up.
Like dead fish putting your
no,
lips up
I mean,
against people
if,
like and
you
think that's a kiss.
To all those
I apologize.
People that you kissed right
but it was
now.
Just for little like yeah. little
call
like,
them on the phone during this episode.
It was just like
I'm
little Hershey
so sorry
kiss kisses
that I would press my lips against you and
Did
do
you
nothing
else. Did you
just
call
else.
Them Hershey kisses?
Isn't that why they're called Hershey kisses? Because they would fit right there.
This is the most fucked up thing I've ever heard you say. We need
Is that not why they're called that? Because it's that it would go get a Hershey kiss.
I'm calling
and make
Keely.
A, make
and
a kissing. No, I don't do it anymore.
And make a kissing face and then put the Hershey kiss there.
Put a Hershey kiss right here. Look, watch. And you don't
I
make. You can't make the noise. You can't make the noise.
I can't.
This is the most animated
right
I've
now.
Seen Zach since I've known him. He's really.
I've seen people online asking me to buy in.
It is the like that. That is
asking
kind of
Zach to buy in, and this is what you get. Be careful
but
what you wish.
Tongue kissing is weird, and you. It's like a confusing thing, and it does sometimes
no,
make sounds.
No, but this isn't when I was tongue kissing. This is when I was just Hershey kissing.
Why were you? But by the way, I was tongue kissing when I was a teenager. I'm not a freak. I remember the first guy that tried to stick his tongue down my throat. Though I did slap him because no one had told me that that's a thing that you do. Yeah. And I got so scared, I just pulled away and I slapped him across the face.
You thought you were just going
back,
well,
making
sure.
Noises.
I didn't know. Why would you put your tongue in someone? It's still a little weird.
Back
you know?
To Lila and Street. We'll talk more about tongue kissing when people are actually done kissing.
Okay, Dad.
Hey, you brought this up.
This is just pecs and they're very loud. Anyway, it's a cute little scene, but you can see the conflict in Street's eyes. And again, like, this is comfortable, but this can't be his future. He knows what he knows already, and he decides to just bluntly say, is there anything going on with you and Riggins? She's like, why would you say that? And so I saw you from the window, which we had this discussion a couple of weeks ago when Street looks down. And I was like, I didn't think it was enough, but the two of you said they put their foreheads together, and that is a sure sign cheating, yep. Right? So I say, I saw you from the window, and she goes, what did you see? And he's like, nothing, I guess. I guess I just got to ask. And then, boom, you're out, right?
Yeah, she could have worked her way out of that one and been like, we were in need and we needed to put foreheads together, two people who love you to connect about our forehead, you know. Yeah. But she didn't, which is kind of cool. I mean, she lied, but she didn't, you know, really try to make you think. She didn't gaslight you, as they say.
Right.
That was nice of her.
We come out of that scene right into, I think, one of the bigger threads of this episode. I mean, there's okay, we have got to move fast today because there is so much good in this episode. Every scene's a banger. Nope. I feel like what? But what?
This has just been a very sexual episode.
No, like, it's really good.
Yeah,
like,
good word like, choice, bro.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
All right.
Sorry. Let me show you what my love language is again.
No, no, please. Okay.
Okay.
All right. Where are you going with this?
We see Smash. He's tried to buy steroids. He found out how much it's going to cost him, and he can't
afford
it.
Steroids are bad. That's a bad thing to do, just so you guys know.
Great. Yeah. Steroids are
disclaimer.
Bad. And so is lying to your mama. And that's what he does. Like, it's interesting. They put and Gaius just delivers every single time. They put him in this position where he's lying but telling the truth at the same time. He's
that's
like
so cool, yeah.
Yeah. He's like, I need the money. I need it for SAT prep. They teach you things you can't teach yourself. And then at the very end he goes, I need this, Mama, I need this. And it just shows this really interesting new place that Smash is in where he is grasping for straws. His confidence is completely shot, and he's willing to even lie to his mother, cheat, steal. You know, it shows all those angles of Smash as he goes along. But the positive of that is that it puts him and Saracen together in a lot of scenes at
the Alamo Freeze.
Yeah.
And woo! I do love, I was so thankful when he came there this episode, because it was the first time I really got to like have actual scenes with Gaius. Mm-hmm. And he is so fun to like be in a scene with. But it's just this kind of great, what's the word? Buddy duo. That's not the word I was looking for. But it's just such a funny pairing. And I think they grow to actually have like a pretty good relationship over the course of the season. And all these relationships, I think, as they actually develop and these characters aren't just teammates, it makes their teammate relationship even different and more.
Yeah, it's fun to see them in different, like you get so used to certain characters on the show being in certain lanes with other people, and you're like, you get so used to those dynamics, and then every once in a while you pluck one out and you toss them in a circumstance with another character, and then you kind of have to see what that relationship's like, and you like grow with them and change with them, and seeing you in that little hat, Zach, that little Alamo Freeze hat. That's
did
hard.
You keep them?
That's
did you keep one?
No, I throw
funny little
every,
hat.
I was so ashamed of myself every.
What?
Like, it's a hard hat to pull off. I'm not going to lie to you.
I can tell you. You make a mean Swizzler, though.
Yeah,
you teach Smash how to make a Swizzler. But the best of these scenes, I think, in my opinion, are Smash teaching you how to flirt.
Yeah, it's hard to watch. it's like thinking about you trying to kiss with your like a Hershey's kiss. It's giving me the same cringe feeling, the way that you were trying to flirt. No offense.
No, but I mean, you know, that's what we've said about so many of these scenes. It was just so fun, and like we all had the freedom to kind of, we knew what the scene was about, and you get to watch him. He knew this character better than absolutely anyone, and they just would send a pretty girl in there, and he would just do his thing.
That's so cool.
And then, you know, I would just mess it up.
What was it like? I mean, you can flirt. You're a flirt. You can do that. So how hard was it to act like you can't flirt?
It was humbling, you know?
How hard was it?
It was humbling to have all these pretty girls just turn me down and just look at me like, ugh, you dumb-dumb.
dumb-dumb.
I was a dumb-dumb in my 20s, though. I say that all the time. But that's a whole other podcast. Anyway, Smash.
Yeah. No, I mean, he's desperate, right? At this point, he doesn't know how he's going to get this money. And the very end of the episode is heartbreaking. But in the middle, you see Saracen really buck up when Smash goes back and gets his hand on the cash, and you catch him with his taking this money out of the till in the back of the office. And he's like, oh, it's all there. You're good. And tries to run away from the problem.
Yeah, it's clear what's going on. But I think, you know, it's watching your heroes fall. Is that the thing? Or seeing them in as their true selves. I think he really looks up to Smash and really thinks, oh, I'm under his wing now. And he's older than I am. And then to feel taken advantage of and by someone you look up to is pretty heartbreaking.
And plus, like, Saracen's so – he's kind of the, like, hero or not, he's the kind of the moral compass in a lot of ways that, you know, and especially, like, as he comes into his own, like, you just feel like he – not even through wanting to be or trying to be, but he just naturally is someone who – has to do the right thing, otherwise he can't do it. It's like it's just such a natural like inclination for your character. So to see something like that, you to be a witness to something like that and having like that conflict, you know, it's like that's like one of the things. You're like a little emotional Batman, and you're like
wait, let me be one little emotional Batman.
Emotional Batman.
Everything starts.
But
with
I think
little.
The thing that really made that scene the purpose of that scene to me, or not the purpose, but the great part about it is. Smash sees this and Smash feels it, and it makes him, you know, regret his choices, and you think he's going to make different decisions. But then at the end, when he gets this literal charity money, that's for something else that he lied about, he can't, you know, you think he would give it back, or you see him cringing in church when his mom's asking for him to be prayed for because he knows this is all a lie.
But he'd have to admit it.
He'd have to admit it, and he's so driven
and he
so
needs it.
Thinks the only way for me to do anything is if I get these steroids that he's willing to like compromise himself completely, and it sucks.
You try and figure out why Saracen's so important and all the ways that Saracen is so important, but he really is one foot on either side of the line. He is somebody who understands that football was never his future, so he's not as invested as all the football players. I mean, he's invested in playing well and winning, and he has all that drive and all that energy, but he understands what the other side is like. And in that scene, what I got from it was, you're like, you don't have to work here, but I need this job.
Right.
Like, if I lose this job, like, I can't support my grandmother. Like, if I lose this job, I don't eat. And you don't need that. You get free meals in this town. Like, it's like I was getting all that energy from you, and you were delivering it. Like, even if, like, none of that is said, like, it's all there. And I just felt the whole thing. And I love seeing Saracen fired up like that. But the end of the episode, yeah, is so heartbreaking. Because he's in church, which is one of his, you know, I mean, that's a weekly place. He's there. He has to look those people in the face every single week. And knowing that he's taking this tithe for himself is like that collection plate is coming to him, and he can't admit it. But now he's in too deep.
Yeah.
But it's also the justification process that goes on inside our mind, right? I mean, I feel like everybody has like this little, you know, tiny, like a court that's like happening where there's like court cases going on in there all the time of being like, how do I justify this? How do I justify my actions? We're all trying to make judgments about what we think is the best thing and what pros outweigh what cons. And, you know, if your perspective is sort of skewed in this one way and you kind of have these blinders on and you're like, this is the ultimate goal. And unfortunately, sometimes you got to break a few eggs to make omelets, you know, to bring back to the eggs that you had in your mouth in the last episode. I feel like that's, you know, in a way that's how he's sort of basing this behavior, is even though he knows and there's this voice behind him and your voice, and now it's sort of starting to, you know, become external, his awareness of this guilt, he still has this thing in mind that's like, all of this, I have to do it in order to reach the end goal, which is the thing that's going to be the best option for everybody, you know. But it's kind of hard watching that sort of that judgment call crumble for him, you know, internally.
Let's move on. Let's jump into, this is like a big episode for the person that Saracen is courting, for Julie Taylor.
Tell us about it, you little courter, you little flirty courter.
Well, she's just got to make a big decision on if she's going to go on a date with me or not, which doesn't seem like that big of a decision. I don't know.
Oh, my God, it's huge. It changed her entire life.
No, I know it is, but I don't know. I was never a high school girl. So May, you know, when you were 15 years old.
Yes.
Which, by the way, real quick flag on the play. And I need to point
love
this
that.
Out.
Yeah.
They literally say when Coach and Tammy are in the car,
right,
and she's like, you know, talking about the three-way and that's our daughter. And she says, our daughter's a sophomore. Well, I guess Julie got held back a year.
Which would never happen to a young woman who reads Melville.
I graduated a year ahead of her. So I just wanted to call that out because I was – you know, not.
Yeah, no, classes are fluid. Grade levels are fluid on the show.
Things.
We've established this already, right? Grade levels are very fluent on this show.
I just had to call it out.
Yeah, I mean,
you're a bunch of 30-year-olds walking around with backpacks on in the
school.
She's
15.
It's like, welcome
later in
to
the
our
episode,
lives.
Coach says 16 years ago, I wasn't ready to be a dad, which I guess
that
still
works.
Makes sense because you're going 16 into 15, you know, a 15. But anyway.
But so at 15, if a guy asks you out,
they say
it's
Jason's
a big
17
deal.
In this, but Riggins and him are supposed
Wait,
to be the
yeah.
same age, but Riggins is a grade two
was
grade
if he
behind
asks
him.
Me out what?
Was it that big? Like, would you take a whole day to debate it?
It's of course. Oh my God. Really? Part of it's even just the drama of high school, right? Which I think is kind of goes back to my point of this being traumatized by the threesome, which is, you know, I look back at high school and the memories I have of like learning any kind of academics are very, very, very small. I'm like, mostly it was about navigating the social world and like the kind of the drama and the dynamics and the stress and the feelings. It was like the stuff that I was like staying up late at night about was not like, ooh, my big paper. I was like, I got to get that paper thing done so I can focus on like, oh my God, writing the note back, because if Emma doesn't have the thing, then Jimmy's not gonna, you know. It was like it's the beginnings of understanding your dynamics and your thought processes and making choices for yourself and understanding those feelings and how strange they are. So like, hell yes, I would have taken a day. I would have stretched that shit out for a week if I had to. It was part of the thing. Well, good for her. Look, it made you do what you did. You stuck with her.
I love it. I think this is a really defining episode for Julie. I mean, up till now, she's been very, you know, I hate the football team. I hate the sport of football. I hate all of the ideas of this. The line I said that she didn't get to say in the episode last was, you know, how can you have homecoming if nobody ever leaves? Like, she believes all that stuff. And this is her growth in a different direction, seeing something. Her absolutist nature would be like, Saracen's a football player. Football players are bad. Sorry. Right. But she's actually using critical thinking to go through and say, do I want to do this? Is this a lane I want to embark down? And even though I love the way she delivers all her lines too, it's like there is a Lois sighting, by the way.
It's her birthday.
There's a scene. It's Lois's birthday is coming up.
Happy birthday, Lois.
But when when Julie first brings up that she's thinking about going on a date with Saracen, she just drops the bomb in the kitchen with the family. She says, you know, oh, this is happening. I'm making red velvet cupcakes for Lois's birthday tomorrow. Probably going to be in a sugar coma after lunch, and I'm considering going on a date with Matt Saracen. Boom. And she walks out.
And she does the Tammy saunter, like, which eventually, of course, results in the Amy Schumer holding the giant glass of wine and sauntering across the thing. But, you know, that is the very famous. You didn't see that? Oh, my God. It's the funniest skit of all time. Amy Schumer did like a skit. I think it was on SNL, wasn't it? Where she like it's her being Tammy. And she's always like she has like the glass of wine and she'll say a thing and then like do the look and then like give him the little and then saunter out like this with the wine. And then she'll, as she does each scene, the wine becomes like bigger and bigger till she's holding like a wine glass this big.
I've seen this. She's, I think, like, go find it.
That was amazing.
I hope really people out there haven't seen it and we can go watch it together. Everybody out there listening, let's go find this.
Schedule a time where Scott can sit down with everyone.
It's called
and
Instagram
watch
Live.
A YouTube clip.
And Scott will do it with you.
And then, but it leads to, you know, they have this like really great phone call. Tammy's freaking out, and Tammy is in this state of freaking out because of the scene that May has already referenced a couple times. The guidance counselor's office. A young woman comes in. She's a rally girl. And we talked about this, you know.
Yeah, she's a football player, wanted her to have a three.
That's actually one of our office PAs, Nora, actually played that role, and she does it stunningly. Fantastic job. She was working as a member of our crew, and she got cast in that role, which is pretty cool. But that scene broke my mother when my mother was watching it with my little sister. My little sister was born on my 15th birthday. My little sister, I think, was 12, 13, going into starting high school, and I got a call from my mom, and she said, we just watched this. My football player wants me to have a three-way, and if I do it, I'll be his girlfriend, so I'm considering it scene. And I was like, wow, that is – and my mom said, we're not watching the show anymore, not with your sister. And I said, well, Mom.
Better to watch it and know the preparation of what's going on.
That was kind of my take.
Have a conversation.
That's what I told her. I said, this allows you to have a conversation about this and say, how do you address this if somebody – says this to you. And I think this is why shows like Friday Night Lights are important when they deal with this parent teenager relationship and all the, there's a lot of crap that goes on in high school. You were talking about the politics of high school. They are real. Yep. They are stunningly real, and they're tough. Yeah. And I said, you know, you can just have a talk with Ariana about this. And maybe it's better that you do that than not know that these are things that are going to be talked about around her every day in high school. But Tammy takes that with her to the house. And so when she hears that, you know, this Matt Saracen thing.
With a football player, she's freaked out about it.
Yeah, just like how the food is made in the kitchen.
Yeah.
She's married to a football coach. She knows football players.
Yeah.
And she's, we can't let this happen.
I love, Scott, you saying the thing about like prompting questions, though. I think it's important to just touch on that really quickly, because I think like something that was important for me as a fan watching the show, and even also something we carried over into parenthood. I feel like a lot of the feedback I get from it and a lot of the things that are some of the most important things that these shows brought is sort of the prompting of difficult topics and questions and ways to navigate them as families. And I feel like I got so much feedback from parenthood that was like, we were struggling to find a way to connect about this or to communicate through this difficult situation. And this gave us a door. And I mean, it's like it healed relationships. It's like, I always get like, you know, I was Amber and my mom was Sarah, and you know, we were dealing with these things and we just didn't have the tools. And then we watched these other relationships work these things out, and we realized there was a way through it, and we were able to bond about going through these difficult topics. Because just because you don't talk about it doesn't mean it doesn't exist, doesn't mean it stops. And so it's kind of a beautiful thing to be able to provide tools to people to deal with these difficult topics that sometimes you don't know how to communicate about or connect about. And then that way you create a circle of trust where you can actually be a part of your child's life and be helpful for them. And you know what I mean?
And as the episode goes on, we get even more of this, like these tough parenting moments that, whether it's watching Tammy parent Lila, and a wonderful scene between the two of them when she sees Lila.
Do we think that was good advice? Because I have a slogan.
The advice so that everybody can hear it and they can decide.
Well, let's get the setup for it all. Lila goes to Riggins' house after Jason asks her the question, "Is something going on with you and Riggins?" She shows up there, knocking on the door. Riggins comes to the door without a shirt on. He can't even put the shirt on. He can't even button up. May was happy.
That was a little treat.
I was like,
that
come
was
on, just you know this. But
come on,
she says, Jason knows. And Tim goes, knows what about us?
Yeah.
How does he know? Did you tell him? No. Then that's all he knows. He doesn't know anything. I didn't tell him. You didn't tell him. It's over. We are done.
You think hospitals don't have windows? Like, what's wrong with him?
We are done. And then Tyra comes to the door, and now Lila is completely crushed. I mean, she's got her guilt. Tim has apparently just moved on back to his old comfort zone.
You can tell Tyra knows, and Tyra's fuming. It's nasty.
But that's like, you know, Tyra and Riggins have gone back to their comfort zone. Lila has nowhere to go, and when Tammy catches up to her on the school grounds and they end up under the stands, she's like, is it over between the two of you? And Lila's like, yeah, it is. It's completely over. And she says, move on with your life, but do not tell that boy right now. He is in the midst of the most terrible thing you could imagine. If you tell him, you are telling him for you.
Yes.
It will destroy him. Don't tell him. Move on with your life and don't tell him. So that's the advice. You don't agree.
No, I'm not saying I don't agree. I get it. And it's just, you know, telling a high school girl that honesty is not the best policy.
I don't know if that's true, though. I feel like it's like I know this is complicated and everything else, but I'm one of those people that like if it's not going to further, if it's not towards a goal or towards the reality of the situation, and it's not going to be, especially if it's going to be harmful to someone who's going through the most painful thing in their entire life. And if it's not continuing, it's not like, oh, don't tell him and keep doing this thing. It's like, especially this situation is so much bigger than what these teenagers could ever have imagined going through. And sometimes grief and pain and all this stuff is gonna manifest, and they're teenagers and they had this moment and they were confused and they didn't know what it was. And so for Tammy, she's sort of looking at the whole picture and going like, with the way the reality of the situation is and what she's being told is gonna not continue and everything else, like, to me that is good advice.
It's realistic. It's grown up. It's grown up advice.
Yeah. Okay. Grown up advice to kids, you know. Which is that happens a lot on this show. You're seeing these people grow up before your very eyes.
I want to follow this storyline through, because that person who's going through the worst stuff, let's shift over to Street for a minute.
Okay.
And so, you know, he's making the decisions of, you know, like whether or not to play murder ball. He wants to. He feels he's ready. You know, the physical therapist tells him, basically breaks down, that's a dumb idea. Your spinal cord's not healed. And by the way, the fact that that guy was not an actual actor blows my mind.
It's incredible.
And so we're kind of stuck with it. Will he, won't he play it? And we get to the – and you do it, and it's scary the whole time. And then you get knocked over. And we can get back into all that, but it's like exciting. We see this new phase in your life, but then, and we see them in the stands. And it's like, okay, they're going to pretend it never happened. And, you know, are we going to go back to that magical day where the three of you went and hung out and we can live that life? And then I just think it was that scene when he leans down and you just punch him.
It's wild.
It's awesome. Because no, I don't. I mean, I knew it happened now because I've seen it, but like, I don't think anyone really expected that. And now Lila has to confront the thing that she's been told not to confront. Blah blah blah. Like, it's it sets off so many things. Sorry, I know I blew through so much, but like, it's.
No, you're allowed. You speak your feelings.
It baby. Was just such a good. Such a satisfying payoff to like so many things that are going on.
Yeah.
And that it's okay to be reactionary. Like poor Jason has had to be so mature and holding up talk about shoulders. Am I right? I mean, he's holding everybody's bullshit on his shoulders while he's also trying to deal with his own issues. And like, sorry, sometimes you can't be the most mature person in the room and go through every single way in a, sometimes you don't have a day to decide if you want to, you know, to go out with somebody or whatever it is. It's like the reactionary place that comes from. I mean, it's like you have been holding it so much in and holding so many people's bullshit on your shoulders, and you just have a moment. It just comes out, and it's like, I'm like, hell yes, brother. I don't condone violence, but come on. Riggy's being bad.
Yeah. The street, man, this episode was awesome.
And I think such a big part of that getting to that moment was the scene with Hark in the hallway on the ramp.
Yeah. Yeah. I what I love about this episode, God, this episode was, they did so much great stuff for Jason. When you first see him with all those quad rugby players and they're just shooting the shit, it's like he's a part of a locker room again. Mm-hmm. And then he's like, did you tell him I'm going to take part in the scrimmage? And everybody shuts up. And then he gets put in his place. You know, there's right. Everybody says, I don't think you're understanding that. So let me spell it out for you. That's used a lot in this show, spelling it out for people. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like you said, you lose your grip, break your neck again. And like you fall, you're not ready. Everyone's telling him he's not ready for the entire thing. And then Herc, that scene in the hallway. Oh man, Kevin's so good. But it's just, they're racing. Jason's feeling like he's on top of the world again. And that felt good to do all of that. And then Street is in a position where he starts kind of busting Herc's balls. He's like, wait a minute, aren't you a medal winner? And Herc comes back with, oh, okay, yeah. You might think you're hot shit, but you're not ready. And now Herc's telling him he's not ready. The guy that's been the impetus for him to get into this is telling him he's not ready. And that pisses him off. And then he does the cheater line. You know, even your little cheater's telling you you're not ready. Oof. And Jason and him have that moment where Jason's just trying to get away from him, get away from the truth, get away from all this, more distance, and he just won't let him pass.
I was so curious. You have your scripts. You love your scripts. Was it written that way? Did you guys come up with it? Did Reiner come up with it? That kind of like cutting you off on your way down?
That scene in the hallway with Herc and Jason trying to – that physicality of it, we all crafted together. It's not quite – like that in the script at all, actually.
I mean, I don't think you could have known. Well, maybe you could have, but it was amazing. Mm-mm.
The moment when they're on the ground and calling for Phil, the moment before that, Kevin Rankin delivered with such, you know, they fight all the way down the ramp. They're yelling, they're fighting, they're everything. And then they hit so hard that they both fall over. And Jason, who has been full of piss and vinegar this entire episode so far, is just broken in that moment. He's just like, the truth of his fear of like, she's all I got, man, please stop busting my balls is like such an on, like you see, oh shoot, this is what Jason's covering up. And that is scripted. And then the thing that really, I think, ends up getting Jason to punch Riggins is the next line, which is Rankin looking at him and go, just because we're crippled doesn't mean we have to take the crumbs.
Yeah.
And what a damn fantastic line, is delivered so well. But the word cripple is thrown around a lot in this episode, and it's just these guys like taking ownership of whatever the world thinks they are and saying, you know, F you, fine, I'll use the word, I'm crippled, you know, we're cripples, whatever you, however you see us, like F you, that's who we are. We're stronger than you think, we're better than you think. And then the thing that confirms to him is that awesome scene with Coach, where Coach is in the chair with Street on the wheelchair rugby court. Man, he does a lot of great parenting this episode, Coach Taylor. Coach Taylor, sometimes questionable decisions, but when I said every scene's awesome, you've got this scene, and you've got the scene, the talk between him and Julie.
Yeah.
And we'll get to that in a little bit. But, you know, Street and Coach, going head to head. He's like, everyone tells me I'm not ready. He says, well, what do you think? He says, I think I'm ready. He goes, you're doing everything that you can. Go with your heart. And then he plays that game. And that game, man.
Again, though, I feel like questionable. It's not the best advice. You literally have a spinal injury that you could just mess yourself up for the rest of your life. And everyone's just like, let's just do the, like, that's not good advice.
That one's trickier. That one's trickier.
And just because it worked out well doesn't mean it was good.
He had to do it. He's right.
But you have to, Jason's in a position where he has to live his life.
Yeah,
yes.
No, he does.
And nobody else can live it for him. And nobody else understands the position he's in. And I bought into that. But playing that sport on that court with those guys, those are Paralympians. Those are Texas Stampede players. They're professional wheelchair rugby players. We are down and dirty. We are in the mess. That chair was my chair. They gave me that chair. If you notice, like, the wheels are angled out to the side. Mm-hmm. Like, these are like little Mad Max mobiles, man. They have like protective reinforcement in the front. They make you sit in a position where like you're tucked down into it for speed and everything. Man, that was awesome. And they were so accepting of me, I think, because the show was telling a very truthful story about what it's like to become paralyzed, where you go, life after injury. And we'll talk more about that later. But Coach Gumbert's in the episode. You see him like yelling at the scrimmage and everything. He was my technical advisor. But it all leads up to Jason punching Riggins. And the funny thing about that scene, when the confrontation happens and then I chase him out of the gym yelling, oh, you're still a cripple's girl, but you won't fight a cripple. When I turn around and Lila comes up and I turn on her,
yeah,
there is a bench there and we improv our movement. We don't have marks. We don't have rehearsals or anything. And the camera operators, we talk about this a lot, are moving around us all the time. And Heather Page is one of our camera operators, and she's on this little stool with wheels, and so she can get around and get, you know, tight close-ups of me and stuff. I don't know where she is all the time. And I'm in that chair, and my peripheral is blocked, and I turn around and I flip the bench. And the final shot of me breaking down crying, and then that shot over my shoulder to the empty gym. What I didn't know is when I flipped that bench, it landed on Heather's foot and broke it.
Oh my God.
And that she pushed herself on one foot away from me and kept shooting. And she got the up close of me weeping and then backed out and got the wide odor. Those are both her shots.
I have chills.
The director calls cut and you hear, no! Like, she screams behind me and I turn around. I'm like, what happened? She's like, I broke her foot. I owed her so many dinners after that. Heather Page is a damn warrior.
Wow, that's legendary.
And listen, that's the danger of shooting the way we shoot. Is we don't know where they are all the time. But that was. I mean, I'm not going to say it's funny, but that was the behind the scenes of that particular scene.
Thank you. I like to hear that.
But all that stuff, man, I didn't know. And I see this every episode. Every episode's like my next favorite episode. I'm like, wait, no, actually, I was wrong. This one's my favorite episode, but this one really is.
And then this is the one, and I'm going to segue here.
Yeah.
This is the episode where it's like, oh, this is why everybody loves Riggins. And it's
yay! Everybody has a moment.
Post sober Hulk and his brother's like, oh, we can get him into college now because he's like having trouble providing for them. And it's like, oh, maybe this is a way we can actually provide a future for Tim. That's annoying to Tim. He's mumbling his way through everything. He, you know, they go to dinner at the Taylor house, and you know, Billy's kind of crapping on their parents, and you can see that he still has he still holds his dad in some regard. And he gets called out on that, and it all leads up to like the big fight at the house. And it's Billy finally says everything he's feeling, like the pressure on him, things he's probably never voiced. And then, you know, calls out the fact that like Tim needs to open his eyes about his parents, and his parents don't care about him.
Yeah.
I mean, I won't speak for them, but it would appear so. And like, it turns into, I feel like, it was such a great fight scene because I guarantee you it was not stuntmen. It was them. And it looked like a real fight.
Yeah. It's like, I love it when it's messy. You can tell it's like a real fight where it's just sort of like it's all like tangled and you're like, what's
happening? I love how it starts though. Billy's got a golf club and he breaks the beer bottle in front of Taylor, and then Taylor's reaction is to throw a bag of Cheetos at him. And I was just like, that's so brilliant in the moment. Kitch was awesome in that moment. Like, he was like, and you see him, he like throws the bag of Cheetos at him, and then he like brushes glass off of his arm. And I was like, that's the little shit that is like so good. But yeah, I mean, that fight though, he says, Dad doesn't care for you. Mom doesn't give a shit about you. What you are to me is another child support check every week, you Ooh. Little bastard. What do you and he calls him a bastard yeah. in the middle of it. I was like, that is powerful as shit. But then they're fighting each other even though they're not mad.
No, they're mad at the world.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things where – and it's so unhealthy, and I think we do it in relationships a lot. The people – family that you love the most, like you're the crappiest to them or you take your stuff out on them because you know they're not going to go anywhere.
Yeah, you take them for granted. It's like – it's why family shows are so crazy because – it's the where the craziest dynamics go down because it's like you're like, well, we're tied together, so I'm going to unleash this shit on you. You don't have the usual delicate, you know, I don't want you to go. It's like, oh, we're in this, so I don't even care. And it's like it's so reactionary.
And I think that's why that fight is – I mean, it's so perfect that it's so messy because they're just letting out – it's so messy what's going on between them, and it's like, all right, this is my – way of getting things out, and it's just wrestling you and fighting you and like knocking over the TV, which was like a tube TV from the 90s. I loved
love those TVs.
Yeah, go ahead.
But it's also when you really start to love Billy.
Oh yeah, these two episodes,
you see
really
Billy's love
him.
For his, even Billy will never really admit how much he loves his brother. You see how much he loves his brother, and it's not just that he wants Tim to succeed because of his like failure to do so. He wants him to succeed because he actually can see a better life for Tim than he has for himself. Mm-hmm. And that scene at the end.
With the keys.
Exactly. The fact that we go through all that and Tim comes home and has that black eye and Benny take it away.
Peas with the peas. There's peas, and they were in the beginning of the peas, and then in the end, and they give them the peas again.
It's like I think it's Chekhov who said, if there's a gun in the first act of a play, it's going to go off in the last act.
It's Chekhov's gun. It's the classic thing. It's like if you show it, you have to have.
So
it
if there's
go
a bag
off.
Of peas bought at the grocery store in the first act,
yeah, that's going to
be put on
Chekhov's gun. And it's so beautiful. And I don't, what was he making? An omelet? Was that an omelet?
Bergen's peas.
Yeah, he's making him some. He's making himself dinner.
Yeah,
He gives him the peas. Well, he says, who gave you that? And Riggins says, J Street. You know, Jay. And Billy's like, yeah, that makes sense. That's what I've been telling you. And this is the comeuppance he deserves, but he doesn't judge him in that moment. He doesn't say, I told you so.
He supports him and gives
him, half his dinner.
I know. It was such a great – I mean, every story, like, I loved in this episode. Yeah. All right, it's time for overtime, I think. I know it's Scott's
time. Here we go.
I mean, I was going to save my overtime for something else, but two things. All right, two things in overtime. Fine. In the middle of – there's an awesome fight when Coach and Tammy are – and she's like, there's something wrong with Tammy. Coach is trying to figure it out. He's like, what's wrong? What's wrong? She's like, she's going to go on a date with Saracen. He's like, he's a good kid. Like, I don't care. And she's – but they're walking back and forth in the house, and the Steadicam is just following them everywhere. You can clearly tell there's no marks. There's nothing. They're just storming around, stomping around. What freedom. It's so awesome as an actor watching that. It's so awesome. But then he says, what do I have to do to help you relax? If I ever say the word relax to my wife, holy shit, do I have hell to pay? And somehow Coach get away with it because he says he's going to talk to Julie. And then the ping pong scene in the garage, best parenting of the episode, the talk that he has with his daughter. And he addresses it as though my mom, like, your mom wants me to tell you that,
classic bit,
you know, here's, listen up. If you're wondering if a boy is thinking about you, he's not. He's thinking about sex or he's hungry. Sex is what they think about every minute of the day. That's why they lie. That's why they'll leave you waiting around for a call and they'll never call you. That's why they're going to be cruel and misleading. And your mother wanted me to add that football players are the worst of those, but I would say that that is not true. I think it applies to everybody. And she's like, are you done? And I love how mature Julie is in this episode. She's taking control of her own life. She's making her own decision, but she's giving it due diligence. And she knows what her father is trying to say. And she doesn't fight back. She doesn't have a very teenage, immature reaction. She says, are you done? Yeah. And he says, and this got me. I cried. You're beautiful, you're sensitive, and you're sweet, and I don't want to see you get hurt. And she says, I love you too, Dad. And then he tells her she's a bad ping pong player. But that moment as a father now, I have a different understanding of it. And having a little sister that's 15 years younger than me, I had a little bit of an understanding of it when I watched it the first time. But this time, it really hit me hard. But I love their relationship. Amy T. Garden knocked it out of the park this episode.
Yeah, she was amazing.
That's my overtime point.
May, what's yours?
My overtime point is just that I loved Scott's overtime point. It's that I think I love the concept of, you know, again, just the pain. And I'm not a parent yet, but I imagine A, that I will never let my partner tell me to relax. B, that I will also try to throw my partner under the bus with my child as much as possible, like he did in that scene. And C, you know, the I think the hardest part, what I imagine the hardest part for me is going to be is, and my parents were really, really good at this, and I'm always still like marvel at how they did this, is like trusting your child and being there for them and supporting them and having that open line of communication. Because I told my parents everything. I never snuck out of the house because I didn't have to. And that seems really hard and I'm scared.
It's scary.
What's your overtime?
My overtime is very concise, but it's just playing into the point that this show, this episode, as amazing as it was full of bad advice. The worst of it was Smash saying to Saracen, don't ask them what they want, you tell them.
Oh my
terrible
God.
Advice, and we will wrap it up on that.
You know, there's so much in this episode I didn't get to talk about. There's a whole story about my indoctrination into the wheelchair rugby team. I guess I'll have to say that for another time. We weren't able to get to it today, but if you out there listening have anything you would like us to get to or talk about or expand upon further, if you have any questions for us, you could do so in the Apple Podcast Rate and Review section. While
hit
you're
that
at it,
subscribe button.
Yeah, while you're at it, subscribe. But we're going to go to our press conference now. A couple of questions from the listeners. I'll start. May, if you want to pick one, and Zach, if you want to pick one. What is your favorite Friday Night Lights reference in other media? And this is from Odds O'Brien.
You know what? I could not think of one until May brought up the Amy Schumer thing, and that is by far my favorite.
Yeah,
it was.
He stole
way
mine.
Too funny. Actually, I'm gonna give
it's
one.
So
oh, sorry. I'll give one shout out, and I didn't know about it. This was a friend of mine I went to college with, Devon Jackson. He's an amazing actor. But he made a like Funny or Die skit that was called. I'll have to find out what it was called. And it was like called Friday Night Something, but it
yes.
was him. And another like improv actor, and it was so like in the style of our show, and it was all like, it was just so many. It's like,
yes, I have watched this many times, and it's awesome.
Yeah, and anyway, and I found it, and I thought it was hilarious, and I texted him, and he said, oh man, I didn't want to tell you about it because I thought you might think I'm making fun of you. I was like, it's the most amazing thing ever.
It's awesome. It's a bunch of them not saying much or not saying anything, but continuing to talk, and it's so good. Funny or Die, Friday Night Lights. Me, New Girl. In one of the very early episodes, Zooey Deschanel, she's a teacher for young kids, and written up on the blackboard behind her, it says, things to do instead of have sexual intercourse, watch Friday Night Lights. So I love it, and I felt like it tied into this episode a little bit as we have kids making big-time decisions in their life in this particular episode.
There's also obviously a really good Parks and Rec one, which I won't even get into, but it's really funny.
Oh,
and
man.
Like, debating.
It's everywhere. I, on Ginny and Georgia, which just released on Netflix not too long ago, there's Friday Night Light references in there, Heart of Dixie. Like all the shows I work on, people work all these things into them as well. So they're everywhere. But that's part of the Friday Night Lights and beyond. This thing had an impact big enough that people were willing to put this show into their show's universe. It's pretty cool. And I feel fortunate to have been a part of it. One more question from the listeners.
May
Zach, go ahead. You haven't gotten to ask one yet.
Okay. This is from Liz Romo 98. Mm-hmm. And this is a great question. Why is
and
there no
– it pertains to what we talked about earlier about time in the yeah. world of time and in this high school world.
So Liz Romo 98 asks, why is there no JV team? Shouldn't Saracen be on the JV team if he's a sophomore?
Well, I think we know from the pilot episode that the second string quarterback was hurt. He was on crutches. So they had to bring Saracen up from JV.
Exactly.
So I'm building a little backstory here just to have him there on the sideline dressed so that if Street got hurt, they had somebody to force in. And that's why nobody knew his name.
Yeah. And we don't talk about JV team.
It's the JV.
Yeah, it's the JV. Who cares? We're not going to make
it. He got pulled up from Pee Wee. Little QB1.
They play on Saturday mornings or something.
Little QB1. And we're done here today. Thank you so much, everybody out there listening. Thank you so much for sticking with us for this crazy ride. We will see you next Thursday. Once again, I am Scott Porter.
I'm Zach Guilford.
I'm Mae Whitman.
Texas forever.
Peace.